Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who joins us by phone today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad, and could be bad or crazy. We're going with crazy for the third one today, and we'll get to that one a little bit later, of course. We start with Donald Trump. We talked about this earlier in the week, where it looked like Donald Trump was starting to fudge his position on immigration, particularly as it dealt with his previous vow to engage in mass deportation, even have a deportation force. Everybody's got to go. We'll let the really terrific ones back in, but they've got to do so legally. And over the past couple of days, it's been coming that Trump is about ready to pull a major shift on this campaign promise. Last night was part two of a town hall with Sean Hannity in the Fox News Channel. So kudos to Hannity for actually finally making some news with these endless sit-downs with Donald Trump. And boy, did he make news last night because he talked a lot about getting rid of all the criminal aliens. Everyone agrees with that. And then Hannity decided to ask him about those here who have been, other than breaking the law to get here, conducting themselves rather honorably since that time. And here's how that went.
Can we be, and I'll ask the audience, you have somebody who's terrific, who's been here
20 years.
Right. Long time. Long court proceeding, long everything. OK. In other words, to get them out. Can we go through a process, or do you think they have to get out? Tell me. I mean, I don't know. You tell me.
Let's do a poll. How many think they should go through a process that maybe give them a chance? Clap. We got to hear you.
How many people?
How many think they should go?
So way more thought that they all should be kicked out. Then Trump decides to talk about it a little more, and the polling of the crowd changes.
So now we have the person, 20 years, been an upstanding person. The family's great. Everyone's great. Do we throw them out, or do we work with them and try and do something?
Well, how many say
Number one, we'll say throw out. Number two, we work with them. Ready? Number one.
Number two.
So just a few minutes later, Jim, we're working with them. We're not going to kick them all out. And then Trump decided to talk about it some more.
And I've had very strong people come up to me, really great, great people come up to me. And they've said, Mr. Trump, I love you. But to take a person that's been here for 15 or 20 years and throw them and the family out, it's so tough, Mr. Trump. I mean, I have it all the time. I mean, go a step further. They'll pay back taxes. They have to pay taxes. There's no amnesty as such. There's no amnesty.
Right.
There's no amnesty. They got to pay back taxes. They got to go through a process. Jim, that sounds an awful lot like the Gang of Eight, except for the fact that he says there would be no citizenship at the end of the line.
Yeah, this was, you know, pretty much the gist of the Rubio view after the Gang of Eight. It was pretty much the view of Ted Cruz for a while. It was pretty much the view of Jeb Bush. Most of the Republicans believed, John Kasich, they all kind of believed some variation of, okay, we're not going to have a path to citizenship, but it doesn't mean you have to deport them all. We'll have a path to legal status, right? You have a work permit. You're allowed to work here. You're just not a U.S. citizen and thus not allowed to vote. Now, you could argue whether that's such a good policy or whether it's such a good idea, whether if you do something like that, it creates enormous pressure to say, well, wait a second, these people are already here legally. Why are we denying them a chance to citizenship? Doesn't this make them second-class citizens, et cetera, et cetera? But this is the exact position that Trump tore into during the primary and denounced and basically said it was, oh, it's open borders, that it's no enforcement, it's not real immigration enforcement. He's, you know, they're not tough enough, they're not strong enough. Now, apparently, very strong people talk to Trump, say the exact same thing that everyone has been saying all along, and suddenly, somehow, he completely flips. You gave credit to Hannity for making this news. Did you see Hannity jumping out of his chair and saying, Donald, how can you say this?
No, not at all.
Most of the people in that room, because that first reaction is very negative. You can see the room turning against Trump as he starts talking about, you know, well, you know, they've been in the country a long time, and do we really want to do all the paperwork of having to get them out of the country? You know, oh, it's going to be such a magilla, you know. And then he goes a second time, and people come around to it. And my sense, Greg, is that we're not dealing with a political movement anymore. We're not dealing with ideology or policy points. This is now a cult of personality. He can completely reverse what he was saying back in November. And at least judging by that room, they're okay with it. They don't mind the fact that he's going against exactly what he was denouncing. He's adopting exactly what he was denouncing during the primary. I think that's psychologically unhealthy. I think that's an indicator that you have outsourced your critical thinking to a leader, and I don't want you to start putting on sneakers and waiting for Comet Hale-Bopp or anything like that in a scenario like that. But this is where we are. I'm really trying to figure out whether this is really going to hurt him, Greg. You might argue that there's not much more room for him to fall, or whether this will genuinely hurt him and that his diehard supporters will feel betrayed and alienated and repulsed, or whether they'll all be okay with it because he's not Hillary, and that's all that really matters right now.
Yeah, a couple things here. Although this is the bread and butter issue, has there ever been any issue that Trump has changed positions on that the diehards didn't immediately embrace? I mean, look at the crowd last night, even on this one.
You figured, you know, when he says, oh, we're going to make the, if he says we're going to make the wall out of tissue paper, you know, maybe that would do it.
Can you believe that this is coming in the first week of the Bannon administration? Or does this show you that Kellyanne Conway is really running the show here?
Man, either Bannon is like the greatest deep cover agent for the pro-amnesty forces ever, or he's locked in a closet somewhere and Kellyanne Conway is taking over. Like the most plausible explanation, I think it was John Podoretz was kind of floating this idea, is that Conway, who is a pollster, showed Trump something that he could not deny, that he had to believe, pointing to a terrible, terrible loss in November. And she put the fear of God into him, and all of a sudden now he's actually willing to change things and willing to do anything to not lose as badly as you know, the polling numbers indicated. An interesting theory, we'll probably hear about this in the HBO series after the election or the big things like that. You know, there'll probably be like four or five really fascinating memoirs. I'm willing to bet we get at least one. We're going to be one by Manafort.
Oh, yeah.
One by Lewandowski. And Kellyanne Conway's might be really interesting, too.
It could very well be.
I did everything I could.
Wow. This might be the flip-flop of the campaign. I think it has to be.
Yeah.
But, of course, at the end, after all of this cajoling and lobbying the crowd, he says he hasn't actually formulated his final policy on this yet. So
It's a little late, don't you think? You know, wasn't immigration kind of important up until now? He's like, I'm still totally rethinking everything I think about this. Well, what it really does tell us, Greg, by the way, is that deep down, everything he said during the primary was opposed. Maybe he felt it or believed it at the time. But nothing is really deeply rooted in Donald Trump, that it's fairly easily replaced. All it took was a few people talking to him, and he changed his mind. And this is what happens when you have somebody who has no core principles, or at least his core principle is, well, what's good for me, the Donald?
Jim, exit question on this. I saw that in Politico, Ted Cruz had a statement saying this once again goes to prove that every statement by Donald Trump has an expiration date. And my question is, are you getting royalties from that?
I'm not. Darn it, Senator. Call my lawyer.
All right. Just in case you forgot that there were two horrible presidential candidates this year, let's move on to the second bad martini. Yesterday, we talked about Hillary Clinton being exposed by the Associated Press, of all organizations, of reserving the vast majority of her private meetings, not the ones with government officials or foreign dignitaries, to very generous donors to the Clinton Foundation, 54-55% of them anyway. Hillary Clinton did a live phone interview with Anderson Cooper on CNN last night. And the interview followed the news that if Hillary Clinton is elected president, there will be even more separation between the government and the Clinton Foundation than when she was Secretary of State. And that led to this exchange between Cooper and Hillary.
Why was it okay for the Clinton Foundation to accept foreign donations when you were Secretary of State, but it wouldn't be okay if you were president?
Well, what we did when I was Secretary of State, as I said, went above and beyond anything that was required, anything that any charitable organization has to do. Now, obviously, if I am president, there will be some unique circumstances.
Didn't those unique circumstances exist?
No. You know, look, Anderson, I know there's a lot of smoke and there's no fire. This AP report, put it in context. It excludes nearly 2,000 meetings I had with world leaders, plus countless other meetings with U.S. government officials.
There's smoke, but there's no fire. I'm pretty sure you still call the fire department when there's a lot of smoke going on, and usually that means there is a fire. But once again, Hillary Clinton, just like with the email scandal, saying, I didn't do anything wrong, but I'd never do it again.
People say who were not in the golden era of political rhetoric and inspiring words, there's a lot of smoke, but there's no fire. I wonder if Hillary Clinton has run that past a fireman lately. That's not what Smokey the Bear said. That's not. Hillary, what you're telling us is really the opposite of what the old saying is, where there's smoke, there's fire. And instead of saying, sure, maybe this looks bad to outsiders, but on the inside, there are a lot of ways she could have said, but she managed to phrase it in a way that basically makes everybody think, oh, yeah, there's totally a fire there. I also love her defense. There's, you know, I had all these meetings with government officials. So basically, I didn't take any bribes from U.S. government officials. Is that the gist? I'm left kind of baffled by this justification, but I guess that's what happens when you really don't have any justification, and you have to go off on these incendiary metaphors.
Okay, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And when we have horrific natural disasters like the flooding in Louisiana, like the tornadoes we saw yesterday in Indiana, and even to some extent the earthquake over in Italy, but when it happens in America, while the devastation is horrifying and shattering to the lives of families, one of the things that we love to see is communities pulling together to help each other, even when their own property has sustained major damage. And we saw that again in Louisiana with all these flooding, all these people displaced from their homes, these people pulling out their boats and helping their neighbors, first of all, and saving their lives, perhaps saving some very important possessions along the way. But now government has to ruin even that. Here is WWL-TV's report on the government trying to get in the way of Good Samaritans.
The Facebook community dubbed them the Cajun Navy.
And for the most part, these are people that are not going to wait for assistance. I mean, they're doers.
Dustin Cluett of St. Armand got his pleasure skiff and with others cleared out entire neighborhoods underwater.
At one time in my boat, I had a guy I dropped off at a Buddhist temple. I had a black guy and I had a Mexican guy. And when we dropped them all off, everybody hugged, high-fived, loved on each other, and sent them on their very way.
And now he and members of the Cajun Navy are speaking out against talk of government regulation. Republican State Senator Jonathan Perry of the Vermilion Lafayette area is working on legislation that could require training, certificates, and a permit fee to allow these Good Samaritans to get past law enforcement into devastated areas. He says some were turned away. He told a radio station, quote, they don't want the liability of someone going out to rescue someone and then not being able to find them. And secondly, there's a cost.
So, Jim, I know where that permit fee can go, and I spell that G-E-A-U-X. This is so infuriating. This is what makes America great in many ways, among many other things, of course. And the government just has to get in the way. And it's once again the government's way of trying to assert itself as the only one who can truly save you.
I was going to say, I'm picturing somebody stuck on a roof of a house. The floodwaters have risen high. The house is already flooded. The water is getting higher and higher. A boat comes along. Quick, come on, jump to the boat. And the person on the roof saying, well, can I see your permit first?
Right.
Can I see some ID? I'm just not sure. And the person on the boat saying, look, before I rescue you, I'm going to need you to sign this waiver that, you know, you're not going to sue me, you know, no personal damages, no risk of trauma. Or, you know, it's the sort of thing that would be a funny Saturday Night Live sketch or something like that back when Saturday Night Live was funny. And they're not. And we should point out, Greg, you mentioned this is from a Republican lawmaker who wants this legislation. Am I right?
Yes.
Now, I wrote about Bobby Jindal way back when he was running for re-election, and you might say, oh, you know, he's a Republican governor, Republican state legislature. You know, he should be getting everything he wants. And he was, in a lot of cases, not getting what he wants. And he was finding that, I don't know whether you want to call them big government Republicans or populist Republicans or old school rhinos, whatever you want to call them, that they were not in line with the Jindal conservative agenda. I don't know if this particular lawmaker fits in that category, but there certainly are big government Republicans who don't mind the regulatory state, who don't mind expanding the state's power, and are willing to put it even into this, the type of area in which people kind of rescue people. And it's almost unintentional self-parody of the extensive reach of government and how it will try to regulate literally everything in your life, including the people coming to rescue you in a disaster.
I don't even know what to say.
It's a heck of a week, Greg. And we still have Friday.
It still is. Jim, rest up. The way this week's gone, we're going to need it for tomorrow. Talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.